Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
We ostensibly have a low unemployment rate, but that masks the difficulty in finding a good job, one that pays a middle-class wage, offers benefits, is ethical work, reasonably stable. Because of the dearth of good jobs, employers offering such a good job can be very picky. How does an applicant stand out against serious competition? And always, because I try to be fair to both the worker, the employee, that is, and as well as the employer, what are tips for employers who want to hire the best employee, not the person who's best at pitching themselves? With me to offer answers is Jeff Hyman. He has started 5 companies, raised $55 million in venture capital, recruited over 3,000 people, and he now helps employers, especially startups, hire the very best people, not just those who are most clever or even dishonest at applying for jobs. Jeff Hyman, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Hey, Marty. It's great to be back on the show. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who are wondering what the back is, we had a nightmare situation where we couldn't get him on the air, and we couldn't get callers on the air, and so he was kind enough to not think we were an amateurish bunch of louts, and he's rejoined us actually for the first time. So anyway, what is one or two things that the job seeker needs to do to go from good applicant to an applicant who actually lands a job when there are other really good candidates?
The single biggest thing, Marty, is for the job seeker to not think of themselves as a job seeker. And I know that sounds a little unintuitive. Let me tell you what I mean. When an individual who's looking to switch roles, or maybe they're unemployed looking for a new role, thinks of themselves as a marketer, what I would describe as the chief marketing officer of their career, they're going to be much more successful. It comes from a place of communicating your brand, what it is you have to offer, your features and benefits, differentiating from your competition, targeting the right companies, and we can talk about all these things if you like, versus sending your resume into a black hole, which is what 99% of people do and is an absolute waste of time. So that's the single biggest thing that I think people should take away, is to think of yourself as a marketer.
What if I said I have a very different kind of meta view over what the job seeker should see himself as?
Let's have it.
It is to be a wise man, wise woman, who is trying to assess a fit. And so you're not trying to necessarily market yourself, which has an implications of hiding your weaknesses, accentuating your strengths. It seems to me you are this person who is radically candid, who says, here are my best strengths and here are my biggest weaknesses, so that in fact we can find a fit. If it's the wrong job, if my weaknesses are not a good fit, goodbye. What do you think about that?
I think we're saying the same thing. Let's get clear on terminology. So by marketing or chief marketing officer of your career, I'm not talking about putting lipstick on a pig, trying to pull one over on people and pass yourself as something that you're not. It has to come from a place, as any marketing head of a company does, with authenticity, understanding your product, which is you, your skills, your passions, what it is you have to offer, targeting companies and roles that make sense. Targeting is a huge part of marketing. So I think we're very much saying the same thing. And then once you're in front of people, the hiring manager, presumably, asking yourself the question, is this something that interests me? Is this something I can excel at in an authentic kind of way? And I think that is all about what marketing is and what job seeking is all about. So I agree with you.
I think we still have a point of disagreement. I opt for mentioning weaknesses up front in the cover letter for two reasons. One, because it screens out the wrong employees, and it also establishes credibility when you're saying something good about yourself. You've only talked about strengths. Do you buy that rationale?
I do. I actually love it. I don't know about the cover letter question, but I do believe that during the process, understanding where your shortcomings are, and I hate to think of them as weaknesses as much as shortcomings for that role or that company or just areas that you don't excel, and the more candid you are, as with any marketing, the recipient will believe more of what you have to say. You'll have more credibility because they will feel like you are a more authentic and in-touch individual. So I actually agree with that. Whether it should be in the cover letter, Marty, I don't know. Cover letters have, you know, their purpose has changed a lot over the years. But I do agree that in the process, the more I can talk about a balanced view of myself, the more likely you are to believe what I have to say versus me just talking about my strengths.
Let's try it in the extremis. Make believe you are the employer. And, of course, if you're looking for a data scientist, you're going to want somebody who's brilliant, who has a great deal of technical knowledge. But for many jobs, being a brain trust is not required. So let's say you're looking for somebody who is, oh, let's say, a more routine person, a data, both data entry and maybe a little higher level. Let's say some kind of an administrative, a lower level administrative assistant. And you get a letter from me that says something like, I was attracted to your job because, yes, I'm interested in your industry. I've got good skills in Microsoft Word and Excel. But I also note that it is not a job that seems to require great inordinate reasoning. I wouldn't use inordinate if I was that person, but great reasoning skills. I am not the fastest learner in the world. So if you are looking for somebody who is going to be constantly learning something new, having to pick up something new, you got the wrong person. But if you're looking for somebody who's extremely loyal, extremely detail-oriented, kind, reliable, I'm your person. Now, I have just said, you know, the greatest failing that exists, I'm not smart. I don't learn quickly. For the right job, for the job at which I am not going to fail, am I not going to be much more likely to be considered, and a job for which I will fail, where, for example, everything is changing, everything is learning all the time, of course I'll get rejected. Isn't it wise even to admit that greatest of sins, that I'm not a great learner?
I don't have an issue with that, as long as it's with the caveat that being the job seeker, you don't necessarily have the full picture, the full insight into what the role entails. You don't have a full picture of the day-to-day of that role or what the hiring manager's view of is required to be successful in that role. So it's okay to put yourself all out there as long as you're prepared for the consequences, which
sure.
is that this particular hiring manager does think it requires that, in which case you might be eliminated from
the situation. Which is great.
But as you've said, it's certainly better than being than sounding cliche and average unlike everybody else.
It's great. I want to be. It's like I like to analogize to romance. If I were looking for a woman and she wanted to have sex 3 times a day, 7 days a week, and I'm a twice a week guy, I want to be rejected by that woman before I get the pain later on of being inadequate for her sexual needs. I want to lay it out on that first date. I probably would at the right moment lay out my approximate sexual appetite.
I wouldn't touch that analogy with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
But I will tell you that there's a lid for every pot. And as long as you, the job seeker, understand that you don't know everything about that person, that the hiring manager, your presumed match, if you will, as long as you understand that, that's fine. But, you know, a data scientist or a data manager from one company and one hiring manager will vary from another. The more background research you can understand, the more you can understand about the hiring manager through their LinkedIn profile and interviews they've done on YouTube, et cetera, the more you can tailor your approach to that individual.
Okay, now let's take a look at this from a very concrete perspective. You know, I'm trying to put my, as I always do, I try to put myself in the shoes of the listenership to this show and of the station. And so I'm going to try to identify what would be like a dream job for many people who are listening to this station and show. And that would be working for working for the Daily Cause, a liberal, you know, they're everything, you know, LGBT rights, prisoner rights, environmental rights, minority rights, the poverty rights, all of that stuff. And there are many, many listeners to this station who would crave to have a solid middle, let's say the director of content for the daily cause. So they're paid six figures and have benefits and it's completely aligned with their values. But they also know if they're applying for this job, let's say it's an openly advertised job, they're also going to know that there are 10 zillion other people, especially here in the Bay Area, who would have an orgasm, forgive me for continuing the sexual illusion, to have that job. So they're in a highly competitive environment. You're telling me they've got to be their chief marketing officer. What if you, Jeff Hyman, were the person applying for that job and you craved it, what would Jeff Hyman do while maintaining absolute integrity?
The first thing I need to do is to differentiate myself from my competition. I get a lot of resumes, I get a lot of cover letters, and I would say that the vast majority of them, over 95%, fail to give me a reason why I need to meet this person. Keep in mind, Marty, that the resume, the cover letter, the sole purpose of them is just to get the meeting. It's not to get the job, right? So it's essentially an advertisement or a direct mail piece. So with all these that I receive, and I'm talking every day, every week, over 95% fail to give me a reason to say, huh, I actually want to meet this person.
So, Jeff, I want you to be more specific. You're a smart guy. You think on your feet. What would you say in that? What would you say in that letter?
So it needs to tell me the one clear thing that you do better than 95% of people.
Make a specific example.
99% of people.
Like what? Give me an example for this job. What would Jeff Hyman, you know, assuming you were qualified, obviously if you're not really qualified for the job, you shouldn't apply. But what would be that one differentiating thing that you would drum home in both your resume and cover letter and perhaps collateral material?
In this particular example, we're talking about a role that is the head of content.
Right.
So one of the major trends or issues is this overwhelming quantity and volume of content that is now available.
Correct.
It has subsumed everything and everyone in its path. It's
correct.
Like a tidal wave.
Correct.
So it would strike me that to your point earlier, if I genuinely had this ability, not just say it, but
right.
if I really feel that, God, if you line up 100 people, I'm in the top 3 or 4 of them.
Right.
At quickly and accurately parsing through content to differentiate what is news from what is crap, or what is, you know, fact from what is fiction, just parsing through all that stuff. For whatever reason, my brain has an ability to do it better than 95, 98% of people.
Okay.
That is a true differentiator, and I would think one that's very relevant to this role.
How would you word it?
But
How would you prove it? Because I could claim that. I could say I'm a real good differentiator. How would I make that case well enough that, as you say, it would levitate my resume to the one of the 3 to 4 who gets interviewed?
Right. So that I think is the point. It's not so much to say it; it's to give demonstrable proof or examples. So, if I was a content manager in a previous role, that would be obviously fantastic because I've kind of proven that I've done this job. But let's say I haven't been. I've had some other role. I've been responsible for some other part of the marketing mix or the sales mix. But part of that role entailed sifting through some massive volume or quantity of something. It doesn't even matter what it was. Explaining that analogy in a very just short few sentences to explain not only do I have the ability to sift through X in a very short period of time, which I know is one of your issues, Mr. Hiring Manager or Ms. Hiring Manager, but I've done it before. In my current role as X, I've had to sift through, and again, give very quantifiable examples. That one compelling message that differentiates you is better than a full-page cover letter that makes you sound just like everybody else.
Right. And so let's say, for example, though, you're absolutely right, that's a key differentiator, content manager, love it. But saying I did it and trying to claim that it was, even though it wasn't quite the same thing, you're still in the defensive mode. What if I said instead you need to be proactive and say, okay, because sifting through this Mount Fuji of information that's going to be coming across my desk is so critical, what I need to do is to show you that how I vet. So I have now vetted through, I have looked through, so we're saying it's the daily cause. So I'm looking through the daily cause and I'm looking through your last 100 articles. And I'm going to tell you what I believe is your top 10 and worst 10 and why. And that would get you a window into the way I think. Wouldn't that be more relevant to their decision that you really are good at that? You could improve.
What you're essentially describing, Marty, is a job audition that I gave myself. I didn't even have to ask to be auditioned for the job. It would be like, sending a tape to SNL to try to get an audition.
Right.
So I love it. It's far better than any cover letter or any spoken word because it's actual demonstrable experience or example. The caveat is, and this is where so many job seekers go wrong, so many job seekers are so desperate or come from a place of desperation to find something that they spray and pray. They send their resume and send it into these black holes and they send it into postings online. Absolute waste of time.
Right.
What is a much better approach is to have a target list of typically I feel 10 to 30 companies is a manageable number.
Or in the Bay Area, nonprofits or government agencies, yes.
Whatever it might be, absolutely. And then you can do what you're describing, which is you can create your own job audition because we're talking about a manageable number of 10 to 30
Correct.
Companies or nonprofits or agencies, et cetera. If I'm praying and spraying and trying to just, maximize my chances by sending it to 1,000 people, I don't have time to do that.
I want to take us to the next step, but I want to let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Jeff Hyman, who helps small businesses hire the best people. And I want to use his expertise as well as mine. We're having a conversation. It's not an interview, as we usually do on the show. We do normally have conversations about the smartest way employees can prevail amid very tough competition, and as well, by implications or directly, how employers can hire the best person, not just the best job seeker. There are some people who apply for jobs who are masters at the BS of trying to snow the employer, but they really are not the best candidate. So we're looking at both. Okay, let's go back to our example, Jeff, of you, Jeff Hyman, are applying for the job. You're the job seeker. And you say you're the chief marketing officer of yourself, trying to get the job as content marketer at the Daily Cause. You said, okay, you're going to identify your one best differentiating feature, either from your past or a simulation of what you might do in the future. What's something else that Jeff Hyman would do if he were vying for that job?
Sadly, here is something that 95% of people don't take the time to do, and that is find out who the hiring manager is for that particular position. So the person that is going to be the direct manager of this vacancy, this content head.
How?
Well, there's a bunch of different ways, but what most people do is they just send it into a blind black hole or they send it to HR. Absolute waste of time. Where I would start is to understand the org structure. LinkedIn becomes the person's becomes your best friend. So 10 years ago, this wasn't possible, but now, thanks to LinkedIn, the job seeker can, through 30 minutes of research, get a pretty good feeling. Going through profiles, doing some smart searches, which is not rocket science, who is the chief marketing officer? Does content seem to report to that person or not? If it does, is there a person between the head of marketing and this content manager? All that will be laid out, and then I can get a pretty good sense. Now, if I'm not 100% positive, I might decide to go for the chief marketing officer or the CMO, the person that runs the division or department that content resides in. But just taking that little bit of time to figure out who is that person, not just their name, but what's important to them. I read about that individual on their LinkedIn profile. I watch their YouTube videos. I read articles they've published. I can get a pretty good sense of their style, their hot buttons, themes that are important to them, what school they went to, all of these things, not for the purpose of small talk, but for the purpose of positioning myself in a way that is likely to engage that person.
Sometimes,
and again, most job seekers do not take the time to do that.
Sure, and sometimes it's even easier than that. Most people are not famous, but if you Google the name of the company and the word vice president or director or manager, you'll often get various names. You may even be able to get it on the website of the company. Sometimes they list, especially nonprofits and government agencies, they're less proprietary about who their people are because they're not as worried about headhunters trying to steal them. So you may even find it that way. And even, heaven forbid, if you pick up the phone, dial press zero for the operator and eventually get a person, or you simply have this automated tree and you simply press whichever department, they say press 7 for marketing, 8 for accounting, 9 for human resources, you press 1, you will sometimes get a person picking up the phone saying, hey, you have a company directory handy. I'm looking to speak to the person who's in charge of content marketing or your content. What's the correct spelling of his or her name? You often get that name. You buy that?
Yes. In general, yes. Many companies, to screen out headhunters and recruiters,
yep,
have stopped the practice of just giving out names because they just worry, they assume that you're an executive recruiter.
Sure.
But it's certainly worth a shot. What I would do before that step, though, is use the power of the network that LinkedIn provides,
sure,
to find someone in common between me and that individual.
Yep.
So before let's say I get the name of the individual, either on LinkedIn or your strategy via phone, before I just call Bob Johnson out of the blue, I now know I'm looking for anyone that I know that knows Bob Johnson. I don't care who it is. It could be someone that goes to his church, someone that works for him, whatever.
Right.
Getting a warm introduction is just infinitesimally better than a cold call.
What's your view of collateral material? You know, these days, especially if it's a large employer, and even something like Daily Cause, if they're going to get 300 applicants, they may use one of these pieces of software called automated tracking systems to screen out resumes based on keywords. So then does collateral material, is it still worth sending something like a proposal for what you would do in the 30 days, a white paper of what you wrote that's relevant to them? Do you believe it's worth sending a piece of collateral material?
I do. Again, you can only do this for a certain number of companies just because of how many hours are in the day, right? But if you have a target list of 10 to 30 companies that you're genuinely passionate about and excited about, it is worth...
If not passionate about, at least interested in it. That passion word gets thrown around too easy. We aren't passionate about that many things. Continue.
It's worth going out of your way to figure out personally who the individual is, what's important to them, and creating a piece that will speak to them. When I say piece, I don't mean a brochure. It could be a piece of code, you know, if you're a developer. It could be the example that we described before of the content manager's ability to sift through information. Whatever it might be, it is worth that time. If you're just sending a resume into a black hole, you're just wasting your time. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that a piece of collateral material doesn't, it's obvious that if you're an artist, you're going to send your portfolio. If you're a coder, you're going to send a piece of code. But what I'm talking about is very often, especially if you're trying to make a change in careers, you could create this white paper that would not be custom to that one employer, but to all 30. Let's say you're very interested in just general progressive causes. That's who you are. I'm forgive any conservative listening to the show because the station is so overwhelmingly left of center. I'm using that as an example. Let's say you're a conservative. And so let's say you're in this content managing thing, and apart from that list of potential of the best articles that may have been on a conservative website like the Daily Caller, you're saying, okay, here is the mega trends that are existing in conservative media, a 3 to 5 page paper that outlines the mega trends, and that would be sent to all 30 of the conservative media outlets for which you want to work. And that's the kind of collateral I'm talking about. So you don't have to do it once.
I see. Look, it can't hurt. The challenge is that the average resume gets about 6 seconds of consideration.
Definitely.
That's just the average.
Yep.
Statistical average.
Yep.
So if you were going to include something like that, it just has to scream that this person is different and it's worth spending some of your time. They may not even read it,
right,
but they may feel just by seeing it that this person is worth meeting with in person.
Right. On the 6 second point, you're absolutely right. And therefore, I obsess when I'm working with my clients in ensuring that those 6 seconds are going to be in the summary up at the top. Summary, highlights, objective, whatever you've got. Would you agree that obsessing about getting that summary or highlights right, that soundbite right, whether it be on your LinkedIn profile or in your resume, is critical?
I would obsess about two things. That is one of them. Getting the summary, which is essentially the positioning of your product. I come back to this chief marketing officer of your career concept. What is the one or two sentence thing? Not this long rambling paragraph with a lot
yep.
of keywords, but what is that summary that I read and I say, that's my gal or that's my guy that I want to interview and spend an hour of my life with. So it's got to be worth my time. So that's the summary. The other thing that is worth obsessing about in the resume is quantifiable examples and accomplishments and achievements for the position, the previous positions, as opposed to what most job seekers do, which is to include basically job descriptions telling me what you did. If you're a marketing manager,
Jeff, I'm going to interrupt you. You know what? That's old news, and it's wrong half the time. Most people's accomplishments are not quantifiable, and they create BS attempts, very thinly, very transparently flimsy attempts at transparency. It's sure, if you're a salesperson, of course, I met 100%, 140% of quota. But if you're most people where your accomplishments are very qualitative, that just ain't going to work. That's an eye roller. That makes employers roll their eyes when they see those feeble attempts. What do you do if you're, you know, let's say you're somebody whose accomplishments are more qualitative in the quality, the way in which you motivated your workforce to streamline things more. Not everything. You know, they also, I saved the company $9 zillion through my innovations and streamlining. Nobody can attribute their own actions to that. What if that quantification is crap? Now what would you do?
If it's crap, then of course I wouldn't even begin to go down that path. But I differ in that I believe that today it's incumbent upon each of us to understand and to the best of our ability quantify the extent to which we're making contributions to the employer, whether it's a five-person nonprofit or IBM. So am I driving sales? If I'm not a salesperson, am I instrumental in the sales process? If so, did I shorten the sales process by X days? Did I increase the close rate by X percent? Did I vet out crappy sales opportunities, therefore enabling our sales reps to better spend their time? So did I help drive sales is one. Did I reduce costs? And if so, how did I do that? Did I cut costs by less waste or by spending time with the profit and loss statement to reduce expenses on initiatives that didn't make sense? Or did I help my company move faster, increase speed? I don't know that I agree that you can just say, here's what I did. Here is my job. Here were my responsibilities. I think hiring managers are looking for someone that can be an impact player. Show me that you will make a difference.
Let's take a couple of calls. If you are either a job seeker currently or an employer who would like to hear, frankly, both of our input about the smartest way to either land a job, maybe your own experience in trying any of these kind of or other techniques, or you're an employer who's looking to hire somebody wisely and you're trying to figure out the smartest way through the thicket of applications, we invite you to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'm talking with Jeff Hyman. He is the head of now something he calls StartupTherapist.com. But what he really does is he helps startups and other small businesses hire wisely. So let us turn now to the employer for a moment. If you are an employer and you are, let's say this per, with the for those of you just joining us, we're using like concrete examples. We're saying you're the employer now. You're the Daily Kos, a leading liberal website and blog, and you're looking to hire an awesome content manager. What would you do specifically to get the best possible woman or man for that job?
So now I'm the employer. Is that
yes.
correct? So the biggest mistake that I see employers make in the assessment and interview phase is to ask questions that are not predictive of success. For example, they will ask hypothetical situations. If you were to come in and be asked to do this, how would you go about it, or what would you do? These have been proven in every regression analysis that I've seen, mm-hmm. not to be predictive of success.
Right.
What is predictive of success is connecting the dots and understanding the individual's background, their contributions, mm-hmm. what types of situations they found themselves in. Was it a startup situation, a turnaround situation, a growth situation? Were they on their own or as part of a team? What contribution did they make? But then really drill into it and dig and dig. How did you make that contribution? What were some of the big objectives or objections or obstacles that you faced, and how did you overcome them? What would your manager say about you? Yep. If I speak with him or her in a reference check, how are they going to describe you? What did you think of your manager? Tell me about that fit. So there are questions, and there, you know, there's great books on this. You know, one of the best ones that I've seen is Hire With Your Head by Lou Adler, or Who by Jeff Smart. These folks talk about questions that are predictive of success. That's probably the single biggest mistake that I see interviewers make.
Jeff, and here, you know, dear listeners, you know, when I'm not quite agreeing with Jeff, I am absolutely doing it. Here, what he's just said is golden. He's 100,000% right. And so you know what I'm going to do? I'm doing something a little anomalous. I'm going to ask you to say it again. Listeners, perk your ears up. If you are either an employer or an employee, this is what a good hiring manager would do. So whether you're an employee, I want you to be prepared for questions like this. If you're an employer, you do this. Go ahead, Jeff, say it again.
Let's start. Just let me give a number that I think will help people understand. The typical interviewer or hiring manager has about a 50% batting average. They could basically flip a coin and be just as accurate on whether they make a good hire for that position or a bad hire. You're never going to be 100%, but what I've seen is you can get it up to 75, 80% or more in terms of accuracy. And the way to do that is by asking questions in the interview process that are predictive of success. Asking questions that will accurately tell me whether this person is likely to succeed in both my company and this role versus not likely to succeed. The mistake people make is asking questions that are not predictive. So tell me about yourself. What would you do if you joined us? What, you know, how would you go about it? Well, the candidate doesn't know enough to answer that question. They don't know the particular situation. So instead, just as if you were selecting a money manager or a mutual fund manager, you would look at their one-year performance, their three-year performance, their 10-year performance by asking questions that are specific. So what I typically would ask is, so let's start, you know, with this role. You were director of marketing at this company. Tell me about what was the charter of your role? What were you brought in to do? What did you do? How did you go about that? What were some of the obstacles that you faced, and how did you overcome them? What was your single biggest accomplishment? What are you most proud of in that role? What were some of your failures? Where did you really screw up? And what was the implication of that? How did you get along with your manager? What would they say about you? What happened then? Why did you leave the company, or how were you promoted? And you ask that over the course of a 1 or 2 hour interview, time and time again for the past few roles, and I typically only go back about 10 years, and I can form a very good, you know, connected dots pattern on a job seeker. Now, that's not going to be 100% predictive, but I know enough to say, you know what, this pattern is definitely here. This person is growing and learning and getting better, and it's likely going to continue. If, on the other hand, I see this person comes in and they never accept responsibility, they always pass the buck or blame it on someone else, they quit when the going gets tough, et cetera, I can also assume that nothing's going to change and that candidate is not going to be worth spending more time on.
Golden. Let's go out the phone number again. We do have calls on the line, but if you would like some advice, whether you're a job seeker or an employer, on how to either hire the best person or be the person who prevails amid tough competition with your fellow job applicants, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco with Jeff Hyman, my guest, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. It is your turn on the air. What's your question or comment for Jeff? Hello, it's you.
Can you speak with me?
Yes.
Yes. Hi. I've been listening to the conversation. It's been very informative. I agree very much about contacting the hiring managers through LinkedIn, getting their background information, understanding the differentiator that you can bring. I have a friend who is a registered nurse. Registered nurses they're registered and they have certain amount of experience, which is pretty common amongst all of them if they worked in certain departments. And this particular nurse has worked in over 25 years of experience, ER, ICU, recovery, you name it, just about everything except for maybe psych. She's having a hard time getting a position because the major hospitals are directing her to apply online. And so my question is, does the same policies apply in terms of trying to contact the hiring manager, trying to get around that black hole that you've described?
Jeff?
For a nurse.
Yeah, I absolutely think that just because I'm encouraged to apply online, 95% of people will go apply online. But the 5% of people who will say, no, I'm not going to do that, or great, they send their resume in online, but then they say, I'm really interested in this particular hospital. They have a particular division or NICU department that I'm very interested in working for. And I find out who runs that department, and I find a way through LinkedIn to network to that person and how to differentiate myself. I am so much more likely to get in front of that person and to get the job versus the 95% of people that just send in their resume to a black hole.
Caller, I'm sorry. Please go ahead. Please finish, Jeff. I'm sorry.
So I just don't believe in the concept of being passive. I think that many companies and HR departments, sadly, go out of their way to just, you know, streamline the process. And a great job seeker who really feels, genuinely feels they're qualified for a particular role and can differentiate themselves has to go out of their way to set themselves apart. And part of that is being a bit brash, perhaps, a bit bold, and getting in touch with the person that's going to make the decision.
I want to be specific to this. So if you Jeff, you mentioned NICU, I guess a neonatal intensive care unit. So let's say, for example, this nurse was interested in working in a neonatal intensive care unit. What I would do, the way to get in the case of nursing, it's actually easier. What I would do is I would call the neonatal intensive care unit or walk in, which very often you can. Hospitals are not closed places because they're visitors all the time. And I would ask for advice. I'd say, I'm a 25-year experienced nurse. I've had ICU experience. There is a black hole when I apply. I'm wondering if you have any advice for me as to what I might do to land a position here. I particularly like Kaiser because I believe in their model or whatever it is. Any advice? And if you do that at your top three or five and you show up and or call those nursing stations, you're likely to get some really great advice. What's your reaction, caller? And Jeff, first of all, what's your reaction to my idea?
I agree completely, because what you've described, yes, you might piss off a person and you might not be taken seriously, but you will have differentiated yourself versus 98% of job seekers who don't have the motivation or the confidence or, frankly, just the resourcefulness to do that.
I would say you would not be written off. And, in fact, if you make the intelligent brief in 30 seconds, you're not going to go and give a long lecture. But what I tried to model here is if I was talking to that charge nurse and I said in very briefly, I have 25 years experience, including ICU, and it's going in the black hole, in 10 seconds I've sounded like somebody who's credible, not somebody like who was going to be written off. So that's my thought. Anyway, Carl, what's your reaction to all this?
I agree. I mean, I've tried to encourage her to walk into the hospitals because she says they're closed. But then I go in there all the time, and
right.
I can go to a nursing station and
right.
ask for a nurse. And
right.
I think that's a good way to have that face-to-face contact. They make a contact through the nurse there, who may be able to tell her who the director of that particular department
is. If she's saying no, that's a symptom that she either, A, really doesn't want to work, B, has real insecurity issues, she doesn't feel competent enough. So I would dig beneath the surface, because if she's blowing off that obviously correct recommendation, when everybody knows you can walk into a nurse's station, there's something beneath that. So if you really want to help her, you're going to ask her, what's really going on? What's behind not doing that?
I completely understand, and I agree with you. And there is more to it, but I don't want to take up the air, you know, talk about all these other issues.
Fair enough.
But I can get past all that. I can help her get past all that. But I just wanted to make sure that my thoughts of her going into the station were the same as what your recommendations are. The other thing I had is she's not very familiar. Actually, both of us are not very familiar with LinkedIn in terms of how to use that precisely. So how would we do that to get a hold of the hiring manager? You mentioned searching for people that worked in the company or searching for a title. Is that your recommendation?
This is Jeff. I'll be fairly blunt, which is in this day and age, 2016, anyone in any profession looking for any kind of job that has not mastered LinkedIn is at a competitive disadvantage. There's just simply no excuse.
Be specific. What should this woman do? What are the one, or we don't want to say mastery. Let's take it incrementally. What's the one or two things that every job seeker, including this woman, needs to know about how to utilize LinkedIn as a tool for gaining employment? Do that.
The first thing to do is to go onto YouTube and watch the series of videos that LinkedIn has produced that walk through exactly how to use the tool. This is now the single biggest professional database in the world, with millions of people showing all their interconnections to each other. So it's free, and it's extremely easy to use if you take the time to go to YouTube to watch those videos. Once you've done that, then you're able to construct searches quite easily around certain geography, certain distance from your house, certain types of roles, or certain types of hospitals, certain sizes, and it'll instantly give you a list of person after person, and then you take a few minutes and you go through each person to say, is this likely a hiring manager? Is this a head of nursing of a NICU unit within 10 miles of my house? That's a person I need to get in front of. That exercise takes a half hour.
Great idea. Totally agree. Great. Caller, thank you very much for the call. All our lines lighted up, so let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. My guest, Jeff Hyman, hiring specialist. What's your question or comment for him?
Yes, hi, Mr. Hyman. Very interesting. A couple of quick questions. One, maybe I can just ask them both very quickly. One is that it sounds to me like a lot of what you're recommending in making yourself be the person who pops out in the process is experience, based on experience. So I'm wondering, what about someone who wants to get into a field and maybe they don't have a lot of demonstrable experience in that field? And my other question, if I may, is it sounds like the person that you're recommending searching out, this hiring manager, is the person whose job it is to say no to 98% of the people who contact the organization. Wouldn't it be more productive to find someone else in the organization who actually, if you impress that person, they would advocate on your behalf to the hiring people?
Okay. So let's take those questions in turn. They're two very different topics. The first one was the unique challenges of the job switcher or career switcher. And you're right. That situation is much harder. But it's still doable. Every day people are hired for jobs that they have never done and maybe have done something completely different. And the way that they do it, if you think about it from the perspective of the person hiring, is that they've convinced that person that they have the key ingredients or the DNA or the characteristics that are likely to be successful in this new type of role. Look, we're all new to a role at some point in our life, right? So you're going to look at things I've done in the past, and I'm going to convince you that I've done A, and I've done B, and I've done C, and that sets me up really well to do D, even though, no, I've never done D. And by the way, I'm real honest about that, as opposed to, trying to pull one over on you, the hiring manager. If I can create that case and get in front of you and explain it, I have a very good chance of convincing the hiring manager to take a chance with me. And that it is a chance. It's a risk, right? The hiring manager is taking a risk on me versus someone that's done it before. Well, why would they do that? Maybe the people that have done it before are not available. Maybe they're too expensive. Maybe they're just not interested in this particular company because it's a less sexy company. So no job candidate is perfect. And if they're willing to even entertain me, there's a reason. And it's very likely that they're just not able to get exactly what they want. So they're willing to, quote unquote, settle for someone that hasn't done that job before. Now I need to convince them that the risk is very low, that if you choose me, that I won't succeed.
I'd like to add something to that.
Yeah, please.
It is an irrational decision for an employer to hire somebody with no experience, except if he or she is wise enough, the employer is wise enough to realize that for most jobs, what really counts is not experience. Of course, if you're going to be a data scientist who's got to be, needs a PhD in a very technical field, you are. But in most jobs, and there have been many books and studies that have supported this, intelligence, drive, and being low maintenance trump experience every day. And so if you are intelligent, have drive, are low maintenance, that is meaning you're easy to get along with, etc., you can often trump the lack of experience. But you're never going to be able to show that, particularly if a job is openly advertised, because then they're going to take somebody with experience. Because in today's world, where you put an ad on Craigslist or on LinkedIn or on Indeed or Simply Hired, they're going to get 100 applicants. So what you need to do is network your way. If you're a career changer, in addition to perhaps sending a piece of collateral material that shows your new expertise in a field, like the keys to marketing nonprofits well in 2016, You need to be able to, in a networking situation, show your intelligence, your drive, in whether it be by joining a volunteer board, joining any kind of volunteer organization, by flirting, going to parties. You can reveal a lot of that in those environments, and then that makes the person feel an emotional connection to you, apart from feeling you're smart and low maintenance and whatever, and say, you know, I really like this person. I think I'm going to give this person a shot. Jeff, what's your reaction to my reaction?
I agree. I'll just add one last thing on this, which is that we're at a 5% unemployment rate, which is effectively, you know, a 1 or 2% unemployment rate for educated individuals, let's say in the Bay Area, et cetera. So hiring managers can't always get what they want, right? They've got a job. It's got to be filled. Someone has to do this task, whatever it might be. And I may not get 200 resumes from people that are perfectly suited for it. I may have to take a chance on a job switcher, a career changer, someone that's never worked in this job before. And if someone can convince me that they are likely to be successful, even though they can't 100% guarantee it, I'm going to take the shot with them.
Of course, the 5% unemployment rate is grossly misleading, because today the actual percentage of people with good jobs, full-time benefited middle-class paying jobs, has declined, while those who are making 10 or 15 bucks an hour part-time temp are increased, but they're still counted as employed. So if we're talking here specifically about vying for good jobs, if you're vying for a good job and you're a career changer, it ain't easy, but it is possible, but it ain't going to be done by answering an ad. It's going to be done with networking and showing your intelligence, your moxie, your low personality, and your low-maintenance personality and your drive. Make sense?
Yes, thank you.
We're going to continue going to the phones. We've gotten, obviously, a lot of interest in this. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, my hiring expert, Jeff Hyman. What is your question or comment for him?
Good morning, Marty.
Hi.
I am a vice president of a multinational high-tech here in the Valley, and I wanted to offer two comments.
Good.
One, going back to one of the caller's comments about, and your guest's comments about applying online versus trying to reach the hiring manager directly, either through LinkedIn or whatever other techniques an individual may have. I would suggest that, particularly for a high-tech and for a large company, applying online is actually a really, really good way to get in the door. An applicant, however, must be efficient and effective applying online. And that means being thorough in the application and submitting it as if they were speaking directly to the hiring manager and not as if they were speaking to the system. I think candidates do a disservice to themselves when they actually submit their information and present themselves to the system just because they're applying online, rather than trying to connect, make a personal connection to the person that ultimately will read their information.
Question. There is, I'm going to add a supporting question. This is not a fighting question.
Surely.
From your position as an employer, I also find that it is a huge invasion. If we're encouraging people to buck the system and go and make calls and emails to your people, it's a huge toll on no employer, no manager wants to be taking calls from job seekers. And so is it also just an unfair intrusion? Do you view it that way, or do you feel it's okay for a worker to try to get an in, if you will, by being aggressive and contacting a hiring manager?
It depends, Marty. And I think it depends, because I will. You're absolutely right. Jeff mentioned that a candidate, an active candidate, needs to think of herself, himself as a CMO of his career. Likewise, for a hiring manager, I take that seriously, and I set time aside to thoroughly review the candidates. And so, my first go-to is the online tool that allows me from the inside to review the submissions. However, if someone were to figure out who I am and how to reach me, one, I can be impressed if, and this is a big if they are actually prepared to engage with me directly. Because the last thing that I want, and I get very disappointed, is if someone reaches my desk, my inbox or my phone, and I go, okay, they're imaginative, they are creative, they found me, great. Can you send me samples of your work? Oh, well, let me get back to you in a week and a half, in 2 weeks. Can we have a brief conversation on in the next 3 hours? Well, unfortunately, I'm not available. Then you know what? If you're not ready, if you're not available, why are you bothering me? Mm-hmm. Why are you imposing on my time if you're not really ready to engage?
I agree completely. A job seeker can do a ton of damage to themselves in that way. The presumption is that the individual is ready to engage. They've done their homework on the hiring manager, the position, the company, the industry, so that when they creatively get in front of that individual, phone, email, in person, they can engage in that dialogue. I agree 100%. You can really shoot yourself in the foot.
Caller, I want to ask you one question. You know, there really is a schism between the reported unemployment rate and how competitive it is to get a good job from where you sit as the vice president of a multinational Silicon Valley company. Paint a picture of how difficult it actually is to get a job. Let's just say an $80,000 a year middle job. How tough is the competition? How many applications do you get that are good, solid? Talk about a little bit about the reality in the workplace for good jobs.
Surely. I'm going to give you a real example without giving names and actual facts that would compromise my opportunity to have this discussion.
Right.
A job for a position for a job that would pay $150,000 plus benefits has attracted 77 candidates. Out of those 77, a good 35 to 45% is people that I call irresponsible candidates. Mm-hmm. Meaning these folks hardly read the posting.
Wow.
Or if they read the posting, they are just sort of shooting in the dark, hoping that someone will be less than prepare and will pick up their application, which makes my process that much more difficult.
Sure.
Right. Then the rest, the 55 to 65% that do rightfully belong in that pool to be considered, it's a highly qualified pool, highly qualified pool. Oftentimes, about 50% of that 45 to 55 of qualified candidates is actually overqualified. It's overqualified, and that then leaves me with about, if I'm doing my math properly on the slide here, with about 25 to 35 percent of the 77 candidates that submitted applications for this post, with actually good, solid, qualified candidates to go through, and that's where I spend my time sifting through that, working with an internal recruiter to do some pre-vetting. Oftentimes, I pick up the phone. If I am interested, I will pick up the phone and call the person directly to then set up a meeting. And then it can take a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
It can actually take a couple of months because like some of the practices that you guys were describing earlier on, I try not to do what historically has been done, which is just have a 1 hour interview and think that you have found the right match. I actually have some of my directs also interview the individual. I have some of my colleagues who ultimately this resource would have to work with, interview the individual so that we can create a more well-rounded picture of the candidate, and the candidate can actually put together a well-rounded picture of the role. It has proven to be a very effective technique. It takes investment on my time and my colleagues, but for the last two hires that I've done this with, the results have been tremendous and a great return on investment for us.
That speaks volumes. That says two things. In when people apply to Harvard, Harvard accepts 7% of its applicants. Your percentage of people who are qualified, 1 out of 77, of whom some are overqualified that you eliminate for being overqualified, you have roughly 25 applicants who are well-suited for the job, highly competent, to use your word, 1 in 25. So it's, in a sense, harder to get this upper-middle-class earning position at a major Silicon Valley company than, in some senses, it's not quite analogous, but more difficult than to get into Harvard. Am I being hyperbolic here?
Well, I've never applied to Harvard, Marty, so I don't know. But if we go by your numbers, then yeah. But I think the outcome for both the candidate and the company are the potential. I mean, the potential return on investment is tremendous,
yep.
And I think that's why we make an attempt to go through the process that I just outlined.
As well, you should. I want to thank you for the call, because we're running anyway. I really appreciate
your call very much.
Jeff, we're just about out of time, so I want to just end with a kind of a softball question for you. Either do you want to say anything in response to what he said, or I just want to make sure that when you get off the air, you're going to say, damn it, I wish I had said that. Is there something you'd like to talk about right now?
No, just 15 seconds on what he said.
Take your time.
This is a hiring manager, right?
Yep.
So we have to remember the hiring manager has a problem that needs to be solved. It's not like they want to have this vacancy. They have a vacancy that needs to be filled with a outstanding person. So if you're a candidate that genuinely is excited, genuinely thinks you can do the job and excel at it, you're doing the hiring manager a favor by drawing your attention to yourself and explaining articulately how you can solve their problem. Hiring managers want to get the job filled.
We have another minute or so, so I have one more question. One thing we haven't touched on at all is reference checks. Do you have any advice either for employers or employees, perhaps even both, on reference checks?
I'll give you 30 seconds on each.
Great.
From the job seeker's perspective, you can differentiate yourself again early in the process, proactively giving your references on a piece of paper before you're even asked.
Good idea.
I want you to talk to these people, these references.
Good idea.
A players are eager to have their references called.
Right.
B and C players are not. I want the email addresses, your relationship, their phone number, all the way back. And if you can't give me a manager, maybe aside from your current manager, but if you can't give me a manager, you better be able to tell me why. Because I can find them on LinkedIn, and I'm going to if I'm doing my job. From the employer,
hold on. Why would most people who are currently employed don't want their current manager to know?
No, I'm talking aside from your current manager.
Okay.
But if there's another former manager that
right.
you can't give me, I want to know why.
Okay.
From the employer's perspective, doing references earlier in the process to help you make your hiring decision, as opposed to what most employers do, which is after you've made a decision, you spend some 5 minutes on some BS, quote-unquote, reference check. You've already made your decision. You've already given an offer. I would argue you're absolutely wasting your time. Don't even bother doing a reference check.
What about the fact that most employees, you know, if I call some place of employment on somebody, they're going to say the company policy is to not give a reference, or they will, they're afraid of being sued by the employee, so they'll say some positive things. How do you get an authentic, legitimate reference in today's litigious environment?
Yeah, I understand that, and I'm respectful of that. The dirty little secret of reference checking, in my experience, is that A players can produce reference checks. And here's why. If the individual, my former manager, is going to say wonderful things about me, how amazing I was, my performance, they were so sorry to see me go, etc., what possible reason could they have for me to sue them? They wouldn't. So a company will have a blanket statement, we don't give references. And day after day, hiring managers at that company will break that rule and give references to outstanding former employees. It happens every day. Not 100% of the time, but most of the time, an A player candidate can provide most of their references. If they can't provide a reference from someone that's currently at that company, they can certainly provide someone else who has left that company and is no longer beholden to that policy.
And that is a lovely way to close, because I agree with you 100% on that. And
great.
So I want to thank you very much, Jeff Hyman, for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko. Give me the 15-second pitch for why they should visit your website or contact you.
The 15-second pitch is that the price is right. It's completely free, startuptherapist.com. There's a full blog. We do a bunch of interviews every week with some CEOs, venture capitalists, headhunters, and they reveal all the secrets we've been talking about today, startup WorkWithTherapist.com.
Thanks again, Jeff Hyman. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening. Your great calls. Love you. You do make the show. Please join me again next Sunday at 11, an entire hour of workovers. You can call in with your work problem. Plus, of course, I'll intersperse my favorite new career tips, some letters from listeners and readers of my stuff that are real practical. Until next time, and tough. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.